This is International Edition on the Voice of America. An Egyptian court declares the Islamic State to be a terrorist group. Pope Francis makes a goodwill gesture toward the leader of a rival Christian denomination. And we'll look at what's behind a surge of Taliban attacks in the Afghan capital. I'm Michael Lippin. An Egyptian court has designated Islamic State militants as a terrorist group. In a statement on Sunday, the court said it also considers all affiliates of the militant group to be terrorist organizations. Those affiliates include Ansar Beit al-Maqdis, an Egyptian jihadi group that pledged its allegiance to the Islamic State earlier this month. Ansar Beit al-Maqdis has frequently attacked Egyptian security forces in the Sinai Peninsula since the army ousted Islamist President Mohamed Morsi last year. Meanwhile, Syrian rights activists said an ongoing fight for control of the Syrian Kurdish town of Kobani has killed at least 50 Islamic State militants in the past day. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said the militants were killed in intense fighting with Kurdish forces aided by U.S. airstrikes. It said 11 Kurdish fighters also were killed. The lawyer for deposed Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak says he could be freed soon from prison. The 86-year-old Mubarak is being held in a military hospital where he is serving a 3-year prison term for corruption. But his attorney said on Sunday the former Egyptian leader could be released early under a new government measure that frees prisoners after they have served 2/3 of their sentences, which he has. On Saturday, a court also acquitted Mubarak of murder charges for the killings of protesters in the 2011 Cairo uprising that led to his ouster. Egyptian authorities said two people were killed and 9 injured on Saturday night in protests against that court decision. The head of the world's Roman Catholic Church, Pope Francis, has made another goodwill gesture toward the Orthodox Christian Church, meeting with its leader for the second time in a year. After Thursday's meeting in Istanbul, the two religious leaders called for an end to violent persecution of Christians in Iraq and Syria and also appealed for more dialogue with Muslims. Dorian Jones has more.
On the final day of his visit to Turkey, Pope Francis celebrated St. Andrew's Day at the Patriarchal Church of St. George in Istanbul. The Pope sat opposite Ecumenical Patriarch Bartholomew, who heads a 250 million strong Orthodox Church. The two leaders signed a joint declaration to support Christians in the Middle East and prevent Christianity from being driven out the region. The declaration calls on regional leaders and the wider international community to do more to end what it called the terrible situation of Christians. The Pope met with Christian refugees during his time in Istanbul. Throughout his 3-day visit, the Pope highlighted the ongoing persecution of Christians and other minorities in the region, especially in countries like Syria and Iraq. Pope Francis and Patriarch Bartholomew say that persecution is giving added impetus to their reunification efforts. The Pope and Patriarch call for a dialogue with Islam based on mutual respect and friendship. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
Qatar is refusing to let an American couple leave the Persian Gulf state even after an appeals court acquitted them of wrongdoing in the death of their adopted daughter. A Doha court on Sunday overturned an earlier ruling against Matthew and Grace Huang. They were originally jailed on murder charges following the January 2013 death of their 8-year-old daughter Gloria, adopted from an orphanage in Ghana. The Qatari court said the couple now were free to leave the country, but hours later, Qatari immigration officials blocked them from boarding a flight at the Doha airport and confiscated their passports. A family representative said they were told a new arrest warrant had been issued for them. U.S. Ambassador Dana Shell Smith met with Qatari officials at the airport and tried to let the Huangs leave the country. They were allowed to remain free pending an appeal, but could not leave. Well, here in the U.S., a white policeman who fatally shot an unarmed black teenager in the central U.S. state of Missouri after a street confrontation has resigned from his post. A lawyer for Officer Darren Wilson said Saturday his resignation from the Ferguson Police Department was effective immediately. Wilson had been on administrative leave since he shot and killed 18-year-old Michael Brown in August in the St. Louis suburb of Ferguson. A grand jury decided last week not to charge Wilson with any crime for that incident. Wilson has said he was acting in self-defense. The grand jury's decision sparked violent protests in Ferguson and demonstrations in several major U.S. cities, with activists denouncing what they say is a miscarriage of justice. Ferguson Mayor James Knowles said Sunday local authorities were working hard to fix the damage from looting and arson incidents in the town. Well, Marxist rebels in Colombia have released an army general and two other hostages, ending a crisis that led President Juan Manuel Santos to suspend peace talks. Mr. Santos said in a message posted on Twitter Sunday that General Ruben Alzate and two others, taken captive by the Revolutionary Armed Forces of Colombia, or FARC, have been handed over to a humanitarian mission led by the International Red Cross. He said the three are in good health and will be reunited with their families soon. Now that he's free, the general could face questions about why he apparently violated military protocol by traveling in a conflict zone in civilian clothes without his security detail. The police chief of Afghanistan's capital has resigned following a series of Taliban militant attacks on foreign targets in Kabul. Afghan General Mohammad Zahir stepped down on Sunday. A day earlier, three Taliban gunmen stormed a foreign guest house in Kabul, killing a South African man and his two children and an Afghan. Afghan security forces later regained control of the area. Ayaz Gul has more on the violence plaguing the Afghan capital.
Taliban attacks have seen a steady rise in Afghanistan this year, but the Islamist insurgency has lately focused most of its violent campaign on Kabul. Within the past month, Afghan authorities say around a dozen high-profile attacks have hit the capital. Interior Ministry spokesman Siddiq Siddiqui on Sunday suggested the rise in Taliban attacks is a reaction to the security agreement the new Afghan leadership has signed with the United States. He said the attacks in Kabul have a direct link to developments like the government's decision to accept the United States as a strategic partner of Afghanistan and as a partner that will assist and train Afghan security forces. Siddiqui went on to say the security deal sent a clear message to the enemies of the Afghan people that an important and biggest partner of the country will not abandon it. The Interior Ministry spokesman blamed local and foreign militants, including some operating in neighboring Pakistan, for the rise in attacks in Kabul. Ayaz Gul for VOA News, Islamabad.
Well, that's a roundup of the latest world news. I'm Michael Lippin. There's more VOA Global coming up right now.
This is VOA, the voice of America from Washington. Time to check international business news. Retail spending over the Thanksgiving weekend in the United States fell 11%. Its second straight annual decline, according to the main industry trade group, a sign that flashy discounts during the four-day shopping bonanza were not enough to prompt increased sales. Total spending from Thursday through Sunday sank 11% from a year earlier to $50.9 billion, according to the National Retail Federation, and shoppers spent an average of $380.95. It's a lot of money, but it's still down 6.4% from the $407 a year earlier.
Well, apparently, Ira, not everybody at Walmart on Black Friday was shopping. Union-backed protesters assembled outside Walmart locations across the nation to demand pay raises for store workers. The protests, which were backed by the United Food and Commercial Workers International Union, were calling on the retail giant to pay workers $15 an hour. Walmart spokeswoman Brooke Buchanan defended the retailer's treatment of employees and downplayed the protests. She said the reality is that Walmart is focused every day on providing our associates with opportunities for job growth.
Pilots at Germany's flagship carrier Lufthansa say they're going to go on strike, grounding passenger flights and some cargo transport out of Germany Monday and Tuesday after the latest round of talks between the airline and its pilots over plans to cut retirement benefits broke down last week. The strikes mark the latest action by the pilots' union, which has repeatedly grounded Germany's biggest airline this year in a labor dispute that has dragged on for more than 2 years. The pilots' action also demonstrates a growing militancy among among German labor unions, which have brought Germany's national railway to a standstill several times this year and are threatening aggressive action to press for higher auto worker wages next year. That's a look at business news.
This is VOA Global on the Voice of America. Jim Stevenson along with Ira Melman. We have coming up the American Cafe and David Byrd with Now.
On American Cafe, did you ever think that, well, we all know about the age divide between those who know how to do digital things and those don't?
Like you and me.
That is correct. And then Michael Lippin on the other side who knows
right.
how to do everything.
We've got the full spectrum here.
Well, you're going to hear about that coming up right now. Stay with us. I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. In a typical classroom setting, older people are teaching younger ones. But when it comes to learning about high-tech devices and internet navigation, the situation can easily be reversed. That is what's happening in Columbia, Maryland, where a free workshop offers seniors technology lessons taught by teenagers, even younger instructors who've grown up in the digital age. Faiza Al-Masri reports on what happens when seniors catch up with the younger generation in technology. Faith Lapidus narrates.
When Myra Stafford signed up for this workshop, she had one goal in mind. The 73-year-old wanted to learn how to use her iPad.
My daughter gave it to me, and she's been long waiting for me to use it.
Her daughter won't have to wait too long because Stafford is learning fast.
I am more confident today than I was before. Today I have more hands-on. Working with young people makes it wonderful because that's all they know. And they didn't make me feel that I was old or dumb.
11-year-old Zion Perkins is Stafford's teacher.
You have to be really, really patient, you know, because some of them might not know as well as others, so you have to be really patient.
Center Director Merity McCaig added the senior tech workshop last year after receiving a donation of several iPads from a local community organization. About 100 seniors have signed up for the classes since then.
As people are aging, their worlds get a little smaller. Some of them can no longer drive. Some of them don't get out to make long trips to see their relatives. And it brings them back out into Facebook and to Skype. And just to be able to communicate, they can do everything from ordering things from Amazon now to ordering groceries or meals.
Teaching seniors about technology also benefits the economy, says career and retirement expert Carrie Hannon.
You have a huge growing population over 60 that's just expanding and offers an incredible opportunity to buy online, to research products that they want to buy, maybe not online, but they research them online. About a third of internet users in general are over 50. As seniors get more excited about using the technology, they're going into the marketplace and buying it. So that's a boom for the economy right there.
As people live longer, retirees may consider getting back into the workforce. And the internet, Hannon says, is a valuable resource that helps them do that.
It is absolutely critical if you're looking for a job in today's market and you're over the age of 50, you absolutely have to be up to speed to technology. There are no excuses. A paper resume is no longer the big thing today. You need to have an online resume. You need to have your LinkedIn presence. And that's how you're going to network. That's how you're going to find jobs today.
That's Carlton Reed Calloway's goal.
When I was retiring in 1995, the computer world was coming in, and I was going out. So I didn't think that it was necessary for me to learn how to use a computer. You know, I was ready just to leave, to get out of it.
Now, as he starts a second career as an actor, it's a necessity.
You have to go online for job interviews. You have to go online to fill out applications. And everything is done online now. And if you don't know how to go online to do these things, I mean, so I had to get in touch with the new world.
17-year-old workshop instructor Madison Lamb showed him how. She's getting something from the class, too.
I think I've learned a lot and how to connect with people and work with, because I'm usually a shy person, so I'm not really good at, like, connecting with others besides my family and friends. So I've learned to be more outgoing.
The benefits for the young teachers go beyond building social skills, says Sapphire Windley with the Youth and Teen Center, which runs the program.
I find in this day and age, our young people, they're trying to explore and find out how do they add value to life, just trying to find their way. So this is something where they're needed and their skill set is valued and it gives them purpose.
For writer Faiza El-Masri, I'm Faith Lapidus, VOA News.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. Join us every day on air, online, and podcast at voanews.com and many podcast platforms.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. Superstar French DJ David Guetta has just released his sixth studio album, Listen, and while it offers some tunes, like the first song released as a single, Dangerous, that will get you dancing, it also features several songs that reflect the tough time the DJ has had in the past year.
You take me down, spin me around, you got me running all the lights. Don't make a sound, talk to me now, let me inside your mind.
Listen is Guetta's first studio album in 3 years. In the interim, since his last album, Nothing But the Beat, he has kept up a tough touring schedule, and he also divorced his wife of 22 years, Kathy Guetta. The 47-year-old Frenchman told the Associated Press that the new album is more intimate and emotional than his previous offerings.
This is a little deeper. It is, of course, an album that makes you want to dance because I'm a DJ first, and I'm a positive person, but it's a little more, my life was not so much of partying lately. It was a little harder on a personal level, and I think you can feel it in the album, actually.
Let's hit the road and away we go. Take a new direction to a different coast. Maybe we should try and put it on the line.
Guetta also approached this album a little differently than his previous ones. He started with the songwriting, including guitar, piano, and vocal, before adding the dance embellishments that have made him famous. Guetta told the AP that he wanted to get away from what was easy and to try something more creative.
One kind of easy way is to say, okay, I have a formula. I'm just going to apply it and stay there as long as I can. But I feel that this is based on fear and negative energy, and I didn't want to live like this. So I preferred to start from scratch again, come with a completely new sound, take risks, and just see how it goes, but at least be passionate about it.
The French DJ gets some high-powered help on this album, including from Sam Martin on Dangerous, Ryan Tedder, and U.S. rap star Nicki Minaj, who sings on Hey Mama.
Be my woman, girl, I
be your man.
Be my woman, girl,
I be your man.
Yes, I be your woman. Yes, I be your baby. Yes, I'll be whatever that you tell me when you're ready. Yes, I'll be your girl, forever your lady. You ain't never got a word, I'm down for you, baby.
Guetta says there were several times when he thought the album was ready, but Minaj would call him and want to make changes. In the end, the craziness was worth it.
I mean, she's such a perfectionist, it's incredible. Like, she really, she drove me a little crazy, but at the end, the result is incredible because, like, she would, like, really call me, like, but little details. But that really, at the end, if you add this detail plus this one, it does change the record. And I think this record is going to be very, very big.
Guetta says he is open to taking risks, like he did with Australian singer Sia on 2011's smash hit Titanium. And he says he wanted to make good music that featured good lyrics and not just good beats.
I'm always open to anyone that is talented. And, you know, it's the same situation now with Dangerous and Sam Martin, you know, that happened to me with Sia at the time with Titanium. It's like, okay, I have all those stars on the album, but I really feel like Dangerous is special. And I want the music to speak for itself. So I don't want necessarily to try to work on the record that is with the biggest artist. I want to just the record that is, to me, the game changer, you know?
So are you a dance music fan? Do you like David Guetta's mixes? Let us know your thoughts by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And remember, you can always email your questions or comments to voaasia@voanews.com. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
From VOA Global in Washington, D.C., with Jim Stevenson, I'm Ira Melman. Stay with us here on VOA Global. Have an interesting story from North Korea. Sony Pictures, you see, is investigating to determine if hackers working on behalf of North Korea might be responsible for a cyber attack that just basically knocked out the studio's computer network right before they were going to start a brand new movie dealing with North Korea.
It's time for sports on VOA Global. Jim Stevenson along with Ira Melman. Malaysia scored two stoppage time goals in a 3-1 victory over Singapore Saturday to book a place in the semifinal of the Suzuki Cup and knock out reigning champions of the Southeast Asia's premier football competition. Safis Ali gave Malaysia the lead in the 63rd minute, but neighboring Singapore equalized with 7 minutes to go.
And there was another match. Thailand beat Myanmar 2-0, setting up a semifinal match against the Philippines. Malaysia will play Vietnam. With Robin Van Persie and Wayne Rooney scoring as Manchester United ease to a third successive victory, the fallen giants of English football appear to be on the right track again Saturday. United's 3-0 victory over Hull ensured the Red Devils will complete a second consecutive weekend of the top four for the first time since Alex Ferguson retired as manager after winning the 2013 title.
In U.S. college football, Alabama's Amari Cooper tied his own college record with 224 yards receiving and caught 3 touchdown passes in the Crimson Tide's 55-44 comeback victory over Auburn Saturday in the highest scoring encounter between the two long-standing rivals. In the other key local rivalry games, top-ranked Florida State survived some struggles by quarterback Jameis Winston to beat Florida. Oregon cruised to a comfortable win over Oregon State, while Mississippi defeated Mississippi State.
The magic number for the U.S. cities hoping to host the 2024 Olympics is $5 billion. Boston, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Washington, D.C. all have submitted spending plans under that mark for their bids to host the Olympics. Keeping the price tag down is a key goal of any future Olympic bid. Fox Sports reports the U.S. Olympic Committee is less than 2 months away from deciding which city, if any, it will back as a candidate for the 2024 Games. The International Olympic Committee has put an emphasis on staying away from skyrocketing spending, especially touchy subject in the United States, where, unlike most countries, the federal government does not help bankroll the Olympics.
And a Brazilian hospital says Pelé's condition is improving as he undergoes temporary kidney treatment in an intensive care unit. That's sports on VOA Global.
This is Science World Express. I'm Rick Pantaleo. Nobel laureate Dr. David Baltimore and his colleagues at the California Institute of Technology are taking a new approach to fight diseases such as HIV, tuberculosis, and malaria. He tells us about his team's research and what can be expected from his new method of fighting disease. Dr. Baltimore, why do researchers seem to be struggling in their work of developing vaccines for such lethal diseases, and what has made it so difficult and such a challenge?
Well, there usually are different reasons for each organism. Some organisms mutate away from vaccines very easily. Some have ways of changing their structure so that you're not fighting one organism. It seems like you're fighting many. And some just hide away the crown jewels so that the immune system can't see them. That's HIV does that. HIV also mutates extensively. Malaria keeps changing its immunogenicity. And for Ebola, we're not exactly sure why it's so difficult, but it has been difficult. On the other hand, things like polio, mumps, measles, chickenpox, smallpox have been relatively easy to protect against because they're very stable targets and they don't change a lot. And every immune system is capable of making a range of antibodies or T cells that protect against those particular organisms. So for those, all you need to do is make a vaccine and get it into people before they see the disease, and it works like a charm.
Doctor, you and your team have taken on a new approach to this challenge and are working on something called VIP.
Now, right.
What is VIP, and could you tell us about this unique new approach in fighting diseases?
We call it VIP. It's vectored immunoprophylaxis. But what we do is to say, if we can make antibodies to the organism, instead of waiting to get the body to make those antibodies, we're going to program the body to make them. And by programming, I mean we use a viral vector that brings into the body the genetic information for making the antibodies. And we can do that very simply, very safely, and we can get antibody made in an experimental animal for the lifetime of the animal. And we're pretty confident that we can do it for at least 10 years in humans.
Doctor, can you fill us in, please, on some of the progress and successes you've come across so far related to developing VIP?
We developed it mainly for HIV because I think that's the greatest need in the world today, a vaccine against HIV. And that's going into clinical testing in humans now, but we still don't have any data on humans. But we have very good data that it's highly protective for experimental animals.
Doctor, would this approach using VIP be a relevant approach in fighting diseases such as tuberculosis, malaria, or Ebola?
We have shown and have published in collaboration with others that it will work for malaria. We've shown that it works for hepatitis C. We've shown that it works for influenza, sort of universal antibody that we can use. So you get long-term protection instead of needing a new vaccine every year. So, yeah, we have demonstrated in animals that it will work for a variety of organisms.
While you're working on the VIP treatment for perhaps a application to fight the flu season is upon us. So right now, what is the best way to protect ourselves from getting influenza?
Well, there's no question that taking the existing vaccine is the best thing we can do. We need to take it every year, but every year we work very hard to make sure that that vaccine covers the strains of influenza that are in circulation that year.
We've been hearing a lot about the various viruses that have captured the most press time, including HIV, TB, malaria, and now Ebola.
Right.
Are there any other challenges, any other diseases, viruses that are prevalent in developing countries that you're looking at?
There is a new virus coming down the pike called chikungunya virus, and that will be very important to protect against in the future because it's a virus that's transmitted by mosquitoes, and the mosquitoes are moving north as global warming takes hold. And so that's going to be a very important new organism to protect against. We already have reason to be thinking about West Nile virus, which appeared on the scene not long ago, again, probably as a function of global warming. Maybe not. But anyway, it's a problem now that we have to deal with.
That was Dr. David Baltimore from Caltech. Thanks for listening to Science World Express. We'd like you to visit our website at voanews.com/science.
This is VOA Global from the Voice of America. With Jim Stevenson, I'm Ira Melman. Well, Sony Pictures Entertainment is just ready to release a new movie called The Interview. It's a comedy about two journalists who were recruited by the CIA to assassinate North Korean leader Kim Jong-un.
Not so funny in North Korea, though.
No. And here's the story here. The Sony is investigating whether to determine if hackers working on behalf of North Korea might be responsible for a cyber attack that knocked out the whole studio's computer network earlier this week. And the attack occurred a month before the release of that movie. The Pyongyang government denounced the film as undisguised sponsoring of terrorism, as well as an act of war in a letter to U.N. Secretary General Ban Ki-moon. And representatives of the North Korean mission to the U.N. could not immediately be reached for comments. Sony's computer system went down Monday. Before screens went dark, they displayed a red skull on the phrase, "hacked by #GOP. Which doesn't quite describe the grand old party, the Republican Party. It reportedly stands for Guardians of Peace, according to the Los Angeles Times. Hackers also warned they would release secrets stolen from the Sony servers, according to the LA Times, the servers.
Well, the hackers said they also warned they would release those secrets, so it would be interesting to see what their release will be as the movie is released.
Yeah, but you know what? It's not going to do anything but help the movie when,
hey,
it,
they
when
said
it comes
any
out.
Promotion is good.
By
right?
all means.
That'll do it for us.
Yep, Barb. We thank, Zubir Al-Tayyab, also Carl Starling.
Our engineers.
They are. And our producer, our director, and our benevolent leader is Diane Gal. We thank you so much for doing all those things today.